Macmillan Audio presents Like, written and narrated for you by A.E. Stallings. For Jason and Atalanta. After a Greek proverb. Uden monimoteron tu prosorinu. We're here for the time being, I answered to the query. Just for a couple of years, we said, a dozen years back. Nothing is more permanent than the temporary. We dine sitting on folding chairs. They were cheap but cheery. We've taped the broken window pane. TV's still out of whack. We're here for the time being, I answered to the query. When we crossed the water, we only brought what we could carry. But there are always boxes that you never do unpack. Nothing is more permanent than the temporary. Sometimes when I'm feeling weepy, you propose a theory. Nostalgia and tear gas have the same acrid smack. We're here for the time being, I answer to the query. We stash bones in the closet when we don't have time to bury, stuff receipts and envelopes, file papers in a stack. Nothing is more permanent than the temporary. 12 years now, and we're still eating off the ordinary. We left our wedding china behind, afraid that it might crack. We're here for the time being, we answer to the query. But nothing is more permanent than the temporary. Ajar. The washing machine door broke. We hand-washed for a week. Left in the tub to soak, the angers began to reek, and sometimes when we spoke, you said we shouldn't speak. Pandora was a bride. The gods gave her a jar, but said, don't look inside. You know how stories are. The can of worms denied. It's never been so far. Whatever the gods forbid, it's sure someone will do. And so Pandora did, and made the worst come true. She peeked under the lid. And out all trouble flew. Sickness, war, and pain, nerves frayed like fretted rope, every mortal bane with which mankind must cope, the only thing to remain, lodged in the mouth, was hope. Or so the tale asserts, and who am I to deny it? Yes, out like black-winged birds, the woes flew and ran riot. But I say that the woes were words, and the only thing left was quiet. Alice, bewildered. Deep in the wood where things escape their names, her childish arm draped round the fawn's soft neck, her diffidence, its skittishness in check, merged in the anonymity that tames. She knits her brow, but nothing now reclaims the syllables that meant herself. Ah, well, she need not answer to the grown-up beck and call, the rote-learned lessons, scolds and blames of girlhood, sentences to pars and gloss. She's untwinned from the likeness in the glass. Yet in the dark ellipsis she can tell, she's certain that her name begins with L. Liza, Lacey, alias, alas, alas, alike, alone, and at a loss. Art Monster. My mother fell for beauty. Although it was another species, ox-eyed, dew-lapped, groomed for sacrifice. She had to devise another self to put herself in, something inhuman, or beauty could not possess her. O Didal mechanics, she grew huge with hybridity, rumor ripened. I was born to be amazed. She fascinated me with cat's cradles, spun threads out of my hirsute hair shirt. I was fed on raw youths and maidens when all I wanted was the cud of clover. I was named after my stepfather, dispenser of judgment. No one called me my mother's son. Minotaur, they said, oh, Minotaur, you are unnatural, grotesque. A hero will come to slay you, a hero who jilts princesses on desert islands. It is heroic to slay, to break a heart, to solve the archaic puzzle in the basement, demonster the darkness. I await this patiently as I bow to the yoke of making, scratching this earliest of inscriptions on a potsherd down here in the midden, writing left to right, then right to left, as a broken beast furrows a field. Autumn Pruning for Evelyn. Et spatio brevi spem longem reseces. You're doing them no favors, letting them get too tall, too fast for their own good. Curtail the sprawl. They'll only get leggy and weak and die faster if you don't take things in hand and show them who's master. Pretend you are that leveler, the wind. Unsheath your blades. Be the gnawing grazer's teeth. Fall back, cluck the clocks. The hour you're dreading comes with time on its hands for the dead heading. You water them and feed them and call yourself a gardener. You coddle and you pardon. Be harder and hardener. Battle of Plataea, Aftermath. Out of Book 9 of the Histories of Herodotus. The Spartan Generals. After the blood-brimmed field, we were amazed to stride into those empty silken tents, bright tapestries, wrought silver ornaments, the furnishings of solid gold. Eyes glazed at all the untold booty, gods be praised. Our king bid foreign cooks spare no expense to make the meal our foes would eat, prepare their pastries, spices, wine, such slowly braised flesh melting off the bone, such colors, scents. Our king laughed as he laid out on the cloth beside the feast our ration of black broth. Behold, they came to rob us of our fare. We also laughed, though fed up with that food, the soldier's mess, the black broth of blood. The Concubines. We heard the Greeks had won. At once I went and decked myself with every bracelet, ring, gold necklace that I owned, and rouged my cheeks, and hastily had my maids arrange my hair. The other concubines slumped in despair, but I'd been snatched from Kos, my people, Greeks. Dressed in white robes of silk, we fled the tent and drove through corpses far as the eye could see, until I saw Pausanias the king. I stepped with golden sandals through the gore, the lady that I was and not the whore, and knelt a supplicant, please set me free. The roar of blood like silence in my ear until, lady, arise, be of good cheer. Lampon the Eginite. Your glory after this victory is sealed, I told Pausanias to please him. Now crown it with revenge for Leonidas beheaded at Thermopylae. Remember the restitution that Xerxes denied us and how he said Mardonius would pay it. Well, here is the cadaver. You just say it, and we'll impale Mardonius's head. He stood in silence as his face went somber. Stranger, he addressed me, on this field the crime was well avenged. As for that corpse, who knows what happened to it? There are versions. The truth is not so straight it never warps. Someone interred it, so I've heard it said, and reaped a handsome bounty from the Persians. The Immortals. He called us the Immortals, the select companions who would battle at his side, Mardonius on his white charger. Pride, we felt, of course. Maybe we half believe we were that day, not helmeted or greaved, no golden scales under the robes we wore. We wielded wicker shields for catching arrows. We were surrounded, as on mountain hunts a pack of Spartan hounds surrounds the boar. In that tight space, we knew our hopes were wrecked, like ships, frail bridges over Hellespont's, the horse-whipped waters bridling at the narrows. We were caught up in doom, as fish or sparrows, grateful, like other men, to die but once. Aristodemus the Coward. I lie here without honor, as I willed. Alone among those at Thermopylae I lived, if it is life to loathe each breath. They say I was the bravest Spartan here, but that I broke formation and I fought not only as one not afraid of death, but one who seeks it, battle-mad, distraught. A Spartan soldier never leaves the line. It took so many Persians to get killed, I slogged on, drunk with slaughter as with wine. And when, at last, I met the foeman's spear, I laid my body down like shame, now free to fall amidst the dust, having fulfilled the ranks of the 299. Bedbugs in Marriage Bed. Maybe it's best to burn the whole thing down. The framework with its secret joineries. Every morning check the sheets for blood, as though for tiny lost virginities, or murder itself distilled into a drop. It might take lighter fluid to make it stop. Maybe it's best to just give up and move. Every morning check the seam of seams. Nothing for weeks, for months, but still you frown, you still wake up at 12:30 each day when darkness blanches and the stars go gray. Who knows what eggs are laid deep in your dreams, hatching like doubts? They're gone, but not for good. They are the negatives you cannot prove. Cast Irony. Who scrubbed this iron skillet in water with surfactant soap meant to cleanse, not kill it? But since its black and lustrous skin despoiled of its enrobing oils, dulled, lets water in, now it is vulnerable and porous, as a hero stripped of his arms before a scornful chorus. It lacks internal consistency, as ancient oral epics, where a Bronze Age warrior might appeal to a boar's tusk helmet-wearing foe who has an anachronistic heart of steel, will of iron, from which metals no one has yet forged a weapon, much less pans or kettles, though there must have been between two eras awkward overlap enacted in the kitchen when mother-in-law and daughter wrangled over the newfangled, over oil and water in proverbial mistrust, brazen youth subject to iron age as iron is to rust. There can be no reasoning with sarcastic oxygen. Only a re-seasoning can give the vessel's life new lease, scour off the scab, the color of dried blood, apply some elbow grease to make it fast, anoint it, put it once more in the fire where everything is cast. Colony Collapse Disorder, Iliad 287-290. Just as a swarm pours from a hollow rock in one long beeline for the wild thyme, alighting in clusters on this purple and that, but is stricken with a mass amnesia that disorients the compass of the sun, and they forget the steps to traditional dances, and each helicopters into a different dimness, taking their saddlebags of sweetness with them. And the hive goes dark, the queen is left to starve, and the drones humbug the whimper of the world, and the palace falls to ruins, broken into by vandals who would loot the golden stores left in the brittle wax hexameters, just so. The Companions of Odysseus in Hades, after Sepphoris. Since we still had a little of the rusk left, what fools to eat against the rules, the sun's slow-moving cattle, each ox huge as a tank, a wall you'd have to siege for 40 years to reach a star, a hero's rank. We starved on the back of the earth, but when we'd stuffed ourselves, we tumbled to these delves, numbskulls fed up with dearth. Crow, Gentleman. Pacing to and fro along the autumn shore among the wrack and reek, with your arms clasped behind your back and sporting your gray frock coat trimmed in black, and your black hat and your lean, long-legged stride, up and down the strand perusing the headlines of the tide, casualties and statistics, futures, stocks, the thousand natural shocks. You clear your throat, inspecting the ink-black seaweed tossed among the rocks like obsolete typewriter ribbons, rusty widow's weeds, scanning the flotsam for morsels cast up by the remorseless gossip of the seas, eminence grise. How elegant you are, everyone concedes. Gentleman crow, with your gimlet gaze, your sardonic beak, how omnivorous, how sleek. Life is a joke you crack, wry and amusing, and death a dainty snack. Cyprian Variations, Alpha. The heart is a divided city between two alphabets. Church bells, minarets betoken, time has stopped where it is broken. Nothing forgets. This is called history, not pity. It is not spoken. Vita. To remember is to cross through no man's land into an imaginary country you do not recognize, but where the streets are real, the walls are stone, you gaze through other eyes. Gamma. The gaze scales the wall and love's promiscuous sparrows unyoked from her chariot, cartwheel up against the sky and tumble pell-mell into the ghostly zone where the sandstone houses crumble and the unpicked, ripened dates fall to them alone. Delta. Within the walls we pass, the dying occupations of the past, last generations of vendors of woven stuffs, the menders of broken obsolete machines, of chairs, menders of souls, the last cobblers at their lasts, even the coffin maker is induced to dread the mass produced. Epsilon. The Museum of Forgotten Trades brandishes its rusted blades, sickles and plowshares, blacksmith's tools. Instruments hang out of tune, with spindles out of fairy tales, sharp enough to make a princess swoon, and baskets to drain the whey from curdled milk. In a flat brass pan, like the bandages of resurrected saints wound up in dingy spools, lie the empty, light cocoons of the silkworm's silk. Zeta. In the marketplace, I bought a sieve, hand-hammered on a collar of wood with nail holes patterned like a lacy flower. It's understood that it would make a lovely powdered sugar tracery on a cake, a present you might give, keeping in your power something colder and more stark, the way it lets the light sift through the jagged holes, the stars in shoals, how it holds back the coarseness of the dark. Eta. We were told that inside, under the library's stone dome, there was a poem, very old, in characters of purest gold. We could almost see the arabesques of bright calligraphy, but could not roam beneath that man-made firmament. Should we be shocked that it was locked? Not knowing what it meant, we could not read the poem, and we went. Theta. Two names for the nameless one, the father, though the ancient cult of the heart is another, the dawn star in the crescent, the effervescent, foam-born, the all-mother. Iota. By stages, phallic talismans in picrolite, the bitter stone, repeated through the ages, evolve to female figurines with outstretched arms or infants at the breast. Grave goods, fertility charms, they stand attentively behind vitrines as if somehow human, warm, and not schematic, cruciform. Kappa. The mother says to her daughter, "The heart is an island. To reach it, you must cross salt water." This is what the daughter fears, that joy, like sorrow, must be reached by shipwreck, tossed on the flotsam of tears. Lambda. Surfeit of the heart, every course, brings more meat and more remorse. It chews what it must choose, impossible to refuse. Me. The sky flies its banner blue and white, while military music sounds below. Autonomy, says the heart, just so, is not the yes of night, but the day of no. Ni. There is another banner, white and red, not flying overhead, but blazoned on the facing mountainside as on a distant shore. You wonder how it looked before and are preoccupied. Xi. In the heart of the island, in the mountains, in the village where the pomegranate trees crack open their ruby lamps, soft and damp, night stoops swiftly and silently as an owl's wings, there in the heart where it's cool and green and the source springs. Omicron. An ancient bone-white vessel, like an owl, brims with delight. Two eyes are holes, the work is fine, for water, perfume, oil, or wine. The mind wanders, though not far, to another crepuscular fowl we call the night jar. P. I've never heard the nightingales of Platris, sleepless at the sill. I never understood the odes and sonnets that hymned that silvery trill, the three-toned threnody that sounds the forest, where I keep vigil still, is not the Philomela of the poets, but poor Hank's whippoorwill. Ro. The insomniac has been here before. Her feet take her to the end of a barricaded street, where a weary sentry forbids her entry, and only cats and dreams pass to and fro across the old acre of loss. There is no way to get there now, it seems. Sigma. You wander about in the museum of confiscated saints with their eyes scratched out, out of sight, pondering the quaint stubbornness of paint, Saul blinded in the damask of the light. Tough. In this frame, Saint George is still murdering the absurd, ill-proportioned dragon that stands stock still as if tethered, craning back its scrawny neck, brandishing its wings, like an endangered bird, scarlet and irrelevant and feathered. Ypsilon. From the ancient mosaic, the hound gazes up, adoring and agog, forever laying a partridge at your feet. Beside her, someone has inlaid, painstakingly, in tesserae in Greek, fair hunting, though the pup awaits something more prosaic, good dog. Fi. The dream gets up from its bed, arches its back, and stretches all its toes very neat. It crosses without passports, on padded feet, and curls up in another head, in another street. He. The insomniac weeps. She's still awake. Church bells rinse the air with buckets of a bright, clean music, and the urgent human cries of minarets punctuate the skies. Hearing the day break and break, at last she sleeps. Psi. The diptych icon's title, Lady of Love, Lady of Sorrow. The city stands beside herself with love, with grief, against a field of pure gold leaf, cradling that sacred child tomorrow in her hands. Omega. Rising from the sea, as on a foot-worn stair, rose-fingered dawn is scrubbing the light till it is raw and bare, sluicing away the night, calling us to prayer. Denouement. Wool gathering afternoon. All I've accomplished, all, is to untangle a wine-dark skein and coil it into a ball. I did not knit a swatch for gauge or cast a stitch or pick a plausible pattern out. I just unworked one hitch after another and went brailing along the maze, over, under, twist and turn to where the ending phrase. It's always best to leave no glitches in the plot. Sailors tell you that the yarn is weakest at the knot. Open, do not tug, the little nooses closed. Tease the cat from her cradle, lead the minotaur by the nose, out of the labyrinth through which all heroes travel, and where the waiting wife will learn to ravels to unravel. Out of the complicated, roll the smooth round one, so when it drops out of your lap, it brightly comes undone, leaping over the floor, like swift ships outward bound, unfurling the catastrophe that aches to be rewound. Dutch flower painting from the 1670s. The ladybird, or bug, exits stage right, or no, stage left, tiptoeing the tabletop, but somewhat towards us, towards the source of light, while overhead towers the scalloped cup of brindled tulip, pillowy peony, bouquet of blooms that never blew together, golden age adynaton. The bee that crawls away behind the base, however, as if to hide some sadness in its face, or disappointment in the painted bower's stigma and stamen, vanishes apace behind what isn't there, that vase of flowers. It doesn't fly. Is it an allegory? It drumbles off to where oil's darkness hives, natura morta cum memento mori, as by withdrawing, mystery survives. Dyeing the Easter Eggs. Dyeing the Easter eggs, the children talk of dying. Resurrections in the air, like the whiff of vinegar. These eggs won't hatch, my daughter says, since they are cooked and dead. A hard-boiled batch. I am the children's blonde American mother who thinks that Easter eggs should be pastel, but they have icon eyes, and they are Greek, and eggs should be, they've learned at school this week, blood red. We compromise, and some are yellow or blue or red and blue, assorted purples, mauves, but most are crimson, a hematic hue, rubbed to a sheen with chrism of olive oil, they will not spoil. As Christian death is a preservative, as Jesus trampled death and harrowed hell, the kids' palms are incarnadine and violet, a mess. Go wash your hands. They wash their hands, punctilious as Pontius Pilate. A Hue, after Horace. Ah, Posthumus, arrived too late. The years are running out. Old age and death don't hesitate because you are devout. Though altars groan with sacrifice, still you cannot deliver yourself from Pluto's heart of ice or from the dismal river where everyone must board the skiff and everyone must cross, whether some poor working stiff or well-rewarded boss. In vain we run away from battle, in vain avoid the sea, the treacherous sea, and autumn's rattle. The wind won't let us be. Someday you must lay eyes upon the black meandering waters, and Sisyphus, who's never done, and Danaus' wicked daughters, and leave behind earth, house, and wife, who only sought to please, and all you planted in this life save gloomy cypress trees. Someday, a more entitled heir will broach your cellar door and swill the costly wine you spare and stain your marble floor. Empathy. My love, I'm grateful tonight. Our listing bed isn't a raft, precariously adrift, as we dodge the Coast Guard light and clasp hold of a girl and a boy. I'm glad we didn't wake our kids in the thin hours to take not a thing, not a favorite toy, and didn't hand over our cash to one of the smuggling rackets, that we didn't buy cheap life jackets no better than bright orange trash and less buoyant. I'm glad that the dark above us is not deeply twinned beneath us and moiled with wind, and we don't scan the sky for a mark, any mark that demarcates a shore as the dinghy starts taking on water. I'm glad that our 6-year-old daughter, who can't swim, is a foot off the floor in the bottom bunk, and our son with his broken arms high and dry, that the ceiling is not seeping sky with our journey but hardly begun. Empathy isn't generous, it's selfish. It's not being nice to say I would pay any price not to be those who'd die to be us. Epic Simile for Rachel Haddis. Right shoulder aching with day-long butchery, left shoulder numb with dints clanged on the shield, the hero is fouled with blood, his own and others, first slick, then sticky, then caked, starting to mat his beard, the armor dead weight all around him. His teeth grit and rattle with every jolt of bronze-rimmed wheels behind the shit-flecked horses. But when he glimpses the mountains, the distant snow, a blankness swoons upon him, and he hears nothing but the white vowels of the wind brushing through stands of spears like conifers, while a banner slips its staff and hangs in the blue like a kestrel or a contrail. The hero's death, the prize elusive quarry of his life, stands stock still in her cloven tracks in snow, and turns, one ear tuned to the creek's far bank, one dished towards him. Her unstartled gaze beads on him like a sniper's sights, until, at the clean report of a cracking poplar branch, she leaps away like luck over rapid water, and snowfall scrims the scene like a mist of tears, like a migraine, like sweat or blood streaming into your eyes. The Erstwhile Archivist. The summer that I turned 19 and felt grown up in love, I took a job as an archivist, sifting through a trove of photographic negatives from old insurance claims and portrait studios, a million faces sans the names, the white tire marks of mangled cars, rooms washed away with fire or crisp with flood, and then the odd event like the premiere of Gone with the Wind. We had to file each image we could see under person, place, or thing. Were accidents all three? Sometimes we sleeved stale evidence, the body's silhouette haloed on a motel floor near a lit cigarette. And then there were the wedding shots, I catalogued each groom arrayed in tailored light, each gray-haired bride in weeds of gloom. Her irises were milky, blind. Her gaze was like a hole. The roses in her hand were ash. Her diamond ring was coal. But these were just the revenants, the brittle shades of love. I lifted like X-rays to the light in a pale latex glove. The summer I turned archivist and filed the past away for some frown-lined researcher on some far winter day. First miracle. Her body like a pomegranate torn wide open, somehow bears what must be born. The irony where a stranger small enough to bed down in the ox-tongue polished trough erupts into the world and breaks the spell of the ancient numbered hours with his yell. Now her breasts ache and weep and soak her shirt whenever she hears his hunger or his hurt. She can't change water into wine. Instead, she fashions sweet milk out of her own blood. For Atalanta. Your name is long and difficult, I know. So many people whom we didn't ask have told us so and taken us to task. You too perhaps will wonder as you grow and blame us with the venom of 13 for ruining your life, using our own love against us keen as a double-bladed knife. Already I can picture the whole scene. How will we answer you? Yes, you were in a hurry to arrive, as if it were a race to be alive. We weighed the syllables, and they rang true. And we were hoping, too, you'd come to like the stories of princesses who weren't set on shelves like china figurines, not allegories, but girls whose glories included rescuing themselves, slaying their own monsters, running free, but not running away. It might be rough, singled out for singularity. Tough. Beauty will be of some help, you'll see. But it is not enough to be nimble, brave, or fleet. O apple of my eye, the world will drop many gilded baubles at your feet to break your stride. Don't look down. Don't stoop to scoop them up. Don't stop. Glitter. All that will remain after an apocalypse is glitter. British Vogue. You have a daughter now. It's everywhere, and often in the company of glue. You can't get rid of it. It's in her hair, a wink of pink, a glint of silver blue. It's catching, like the chicken pox or lice. It travels like a planetary scar. Sometimes it's on your face, or you look twice and glimpse there on your arm a single star. You know it by a hand's brushing your neck. You blush. It's not desire, not anymore. Just someone's urge to flick away the fleck of borrowed glamour from your collarbone, the broken mirror time will not restore, the way your daughter marks you as her own. Half of an epic simile not found in Hesiod. As at the winter solstice, when a faded blonde on the brink of middle age goes to the salon to brighten up her outlook and her spirits, warm water on her scalp, the rich shampoo that breathes of almond blossoms, to submit to another's expert, disinterested caresses, while outside the plate glass window, people push against the dwindling year and lean into the wind, their foreheads pinched with doubt and debt, and it's afternoon, but night comes chattering down like the shutters of a shop in a recession, and all she asks for is a color adjustment, for rays of honey to eclipse the gray, and for the light to lengthen just a little. The Last Carousel. The horses have seen better days go by, with the one eye that peers out on the orbiting world. The other eye has always looked inward to where the moving parts are hidden by a column of gilt-edged tarnished mirrors. Why are we pierced through our hearts by their poles of polished brass? Mismatched orphans, some antique carved of solid wood, some factory-molded fiberglass. They course counterclockwise, round and round, while time holds them at arm's length. Their feet are shod, but never touch the ground. They've known the shake of reins bidding them race, the heels that drum their flanks, urging them faster and faster in one place. The laughter and the outside voices calling, the tinned music stuttering in its rut, the last seasick tide rising or falling. Their gallop is a wave that seizes. In their rhythmic progression, they are cousin to the horses on stolen marble friezes in bas-relief in some far-off museum that once were prinked with paint. But now that I see them waiting patiently beneath the hive of garish light, as one giddy generation mounts and another sulks into the night, one last go, it isn't fair. I am moved by the pivot of their stillness, by their ragged comet tails of genuine horsehair. Lice. It starts with a hunch. Watching her scratch unthinkingly behind her ear, you wiggle a hitch loose along a burnished shaft. It's just as you fear. Now you're picking nits, with a fine-toothed comb no less. Lousy metaphor. How pediculous. But now it's personal. It's chemical. It's war. No quarter, no truce. You lord it over their dead, their pedantic puce. Undo the unborn. Murder is meticulous. That star her dark head. Divide in sectors lest anything be overlooked, doubt's niggling itch. Mankind will never be rid of them. Like the poor, they're always with us, vectors of nothing but disgrace and shame, charmless as they are harmless. Like the Sestina, with a nod to Jonah Winter. Now we're all friends, there is no love but like. A semi-demigoddess, something like a reality TV star lookalike named Simile or Me Too, so we like in order to be liked. It isn't like there's love or hate now. Even plain dislike is frowned on. There's no button for it. Like is something you can quantify. Each like you gathers almost something money-like, token of virtual support. Please like this page to stamp out hunger. And you'd like to end hunger and climate change alike. But it's unlikely like does diddly. Like just twiddles its unopposing thumbs up, likewise props up scarecrow silences. I'm like so over him, I overhear, but like he doesn't get it, like, you know, he's like it's all okay. Like I don't even like him anymore, whatever, I'm all like. Take like out of our chat. We'd all alike flounder agape, gesticulating like a foreign film sans subtitles, fall like dumb phones to mooted desuetude. Unlike with other crutches, when we use like, we're not just buying time on credit. Like displaces other words. Crowds cuckoo-like, endangered hatchlings from the nest. Click like if you're against extinction. Like is like invasive zebra mussels, or it's like those nutria things, or kudzu, or belike redundant fast food franchises, each like more like the next. Those poets who dislike inversions, archaisms, who just like plain English as she spoke. Why isn't like there literally every other word? I'd like us just to admit that's what real speech is like. But as you like, my friend. Yes, we're alike, how we pronounce, say, lichen and dislike, cancer and war. So like this page. Click like. Little Owl, Athene Noctua. It's not what we see, but what sees us makes us who we are. Do you remember years ago on Spetses, under the evening star, as the surf rolled and rolled on its glass dowel, we strolled along the sea road and spied a little owl, less a bird than a small clay jar balanced implausibly on an olive branch, a drab still vessel attuned to whatever stirred, near or far, hedgehog shuffling among windfall of figs, gecko, mouse. Then she swiveled the orbit of her gaze upon us like the cyclops eye beam of a lighthouse. Lost and Found. I crawled all morning on my hands and knees, searching for what was lost. Beneath a chair, behind the out-of-tune piano. Please, I prayed to entropy, let it be there. Some vital Lego brick or puzzle piece, a child bereft as hiccuping despair. A ball, a doll's leg popped out of its socket, or treasures fallen through a holy pocket. Amazing what webbed shadows can conceal. A three-wheeled matchbox car or half a brace of socks or shoes. Oblivion will steal promiscuously, lost without a trace, microscopic bits of Playmobil, the backup set of house keys. You misplace your temper and your wits till you exhaust all patience with the hours it has cost. I thought, too, of that parable, the other, not the one men preach of the lost sheep, the lesser-known one on the housewife's bother over a missing coin, how she must sweep the house to find it. No doubt she was a mother, I think, and laugh, and then I want to weep, the hours drained as women rearrange the furniture in search of small lost change. Tidy up your room, I told my son. That way it's easier to look. It's true. He made an effort, a half-hearted one, abandoned after just a block or two. It isn't fair, he said. It isn't fun. I never do what I would like to do, but you always do just what you want. Which plucked a string as though a cosmic taunt. I paused. Is that what you think, then? I said. Sometimes he seemed less 7-year-old boy than teenager. That making you go to bed or washing dishes is something I enjoy, and that I've nothing better to do instead of hunting for a crappy plastic toy? Raised voices, tears, apologies all round, and yet the crucial piece was never found. That night, I was still seeking in my dreams, still groping after fragments and the maimed, just as in dreams a seamstress stitches seams, or politician spins truth unashamed, or loping through remembered fields and streams, the hound pursues the scent that can't be named, her paws a twitch, though heavily she lies, and dog's body, the body, does not rise. Or as a poet stalks a skittish rhyme behind her lidded eyes, beneath the mask of sleep, because the mind has no free time, but keeps at night to its diurnal task, and pushes the stone as high as it can climb before it trochees down again. Don't ask the mind to rest, though someday it must cease. In life, only the flesh has any peace. It seemed I searched, though, in a dusty place, beneath a black sky thrilled with stars, ground strewn with stones whose blotting shade seemed to erase the land's gleam like a tarnished silver spoon. A figure neared with adumbrated face who said, "This is the valley on the moon where everything misplaced on earth accrues, and here all things are gathered that you lose." The moon? Yet I did not dispute the claim. She seemed familiar. Hard to tell among such alien surroundings. All the same, a word seemed out of reach. Tip of my tongue, close clustered consonants and vowels, a name. Beneath her hood, I glimpsed a face not young, but elegant, refined as it grew older. My name she knew, although I hadn't told her. Now that my eyes had focused in the dark, I saw that what seemed mountains, ridges, hills all hemmed around us, flinging down their stark chill silhouettes, were overflowing landfills, huge heaps of congeries. And I could mark the mounds of keys or orphaned socks, dropped pills. Those were the things that I could recognize, like bombed out cities black against the skies. Somehow it brought to mind the vestibule, jumbled with hats, umbrellas, backpacks, totes, scarves, gym shoes, that they keep at my son's school behind the lunchroom, bins of winter coats, hairbands, sunglasses stacked up on a stool. Each thing spoke volumes or quipped anecdotes, lorn, makeless gloves, lunchboxes starting to model. I'd come to seek an AWOL water bottle. "Look there," she said, and gestured to the keys. "Those are the halls to which we can't return, the rooms where we once sat on others' knees, grandparents' houses, loving, spare, and stern, tree houses where we whispered to the trees gauche secrets, virgin bedrooms where we'd burn, love's first apartments. As we shut each door, it locks. We cannot enter anymore." There was a mound that loomed above our heads, a skein of dusty strands, large as a barn. "Are these," I asked, "the sum of hair one sheds in life, or all the rips one has to darn?" She laughed and said, "Those are the frayed, lost threads of conversations, arguments, the yarn of thought and logic's clues we'd thought we'd spun, only to find they'd somehow come undone." Then there was sunk among the hills a bowl, a wide, shallow depression, in which O's or ciphers gathered, thin and black as coal, like washers of black iron. I asked, "And those?" "They mark our absences. It's through the whole of lapsed attention that the moment goes." I thought of those assemblies with repentance where I had mocked the prizes of attendance. "And that?" I pointed to a pyramid of papers ever threatening to tumble. It shifted. Sheaves of pages suddenly slid, then seemed to settle. I stepped back from the jumble, thinking we might be buried there amid an avalanche of foolscap. A hushed rumble shuffled its menace. I whispered, "Then are those the poems lost, or pages of sure prose, maybe even something that would sell? A book about a young aspiring warlock that disappeared when something broke the spell, when toddler learned to work the study door lock or telephone braid bad news, or the front bell portended importunity from Porlock. The poems," she said, "that perish at the brink of being aren't so many as you think." Nor yet so great. No, no. These are the letters we meant to write and didn't. All the unsaid, begrudged congratulations to our betters, condolences we owed the lately dead, love notes unsent. In love we all are debtors. Gratitude to teachers who penned in red corrections to our ignorant defenses, apologies kept close like confidences. A vague, headachy cloud among the towers rose as heaps of gray down from black swans. "Those are," she said, "insomnia's desperate hours, lost sleep, countdown of clocks, the impotent yawns, the teething cries, sweet drowsiness that sours, the night feedings that soldier into dawns. I watched as creatures, etiolated, pale, weighed bales of feathers in a brazen scale." What were the creatures doing? She explained, "For every hour that we lose of sleep, another hour of wakefulness is gained. There is a tally that we have to keep. Unbearable minutes." She saw that I was pained. "Perhaps," she said, "but sometimes in the deep of night, reflections come we cannot parse. To consider means to contemplate the stars." Skittering round us, skirls of silver sand would swarm and arch into a ridge or dune and then disperse, as if an unseen hand swept them away. There was no wind. Then soon accumulate elsewhere, a saraband of form and entropy, a restive swoon of particles forever in a welter, like starling murmurations seeking shelter. "The sands of time." I didn't have to speak. She answered straight away with some disdain. "With scything hands you hasten through the week clockwise, while widdershins the fair hours drain. Haste," she declared, "is violence in Greek." Then she bore on in silence once again. "Why won't they rest?" I asked in puzzlement. "Minutes are not lost," she said, "but spent." Nearby, a glint of vitreous splinters, foiled with silver, bristled in a jagged mass. "This is a woman's loveliness that's spoiled with age," she said, "and tears, and days that pass. Her raiment that is creased, thread-worn, and soiled. Here, seek that vanished beauty in this glass," and gave me a reflection where I sought her, nothing at first, but then I saw my daughter. Eyes brown, not blue, the hair not straight but curled. "Not truly lost," she laughed at my surprise. "Some things fetch up on the bright shores of the world once more, under a slightly different guise. Meanwhile, they are not lost, but somehow furled back in the heart of things from which they rise." And saying this, she turned and did not wait, but something nearby made me hesitate. I couldn't make it out at first. A pile of bone chips, ivory splinters. Like a sleuth, I sneaked a handful, following the while, but stopped short when I realized the truth and let them fall and dropped my neutral smile. Each keen point was a tiny human tooth. I looked back over my shoulder for a glimpse, and gasped to see 1,000 small gray imps go scampering up the hill with wrinkled wings, leathern like bats, with backs hunched up to carry slung on their shoulders, sacks bulged with grim things. More teeth, I thought. Remains you ought to bury. My guide observed me watch their scurryings. But don't you recognize a real tooth fairy? Each baby tooth, deciduous but bright, stands for a childhood rooted in delight. But those that come here stained, starting to rot, are childhoods that are eaten up with sorrow, eroded by the acids of their lot, and others' sins they are compelled to borrow. So many, I exclaimed, as fairies brought more chatterings of teeth. Yes, and tomorrow. It never stops. Each childhood is outgrown by sharper permanence, even your own. Children, she meant, cannot stay as they are. Already your son's childhood is consigned. She held up 6 fine milk teeth in a jar. Already he is leaving it behind, striding forth as light strides from a star. And though the star blow out, inert and blind, the light strides on and reaches other eyes that in some distant time scan these same skies. At last, our path came to a spring, whose gleam provoked my thirst. 2 cups of battered zinc hung from a pair of hooks there. One had dream inscribed upon it, on the other, think. But when I dipped each cup's lip to the stream, immediately it began to sink. When both had vanished, she said, "Do not wet your lips here with the waters of forget." Not water, though, I knew as I drew near it. It was a liquid, true, but more like gin, though smelling of aniseed. Some cold, clear spirit, water turns cloudy. Many are taken in. Some poets seek it, thinking that they fear it. The reflectionless fountain of oblivion, by sex, by pills, by leap of doubt, by gas, or at the bottom of a tilting glass. But you must remember and return. Now I saw clearly skin of alabaster, her moon-washed hair, a gaze one could discern as gunmetal gray, and then at last I asked her, "Who are you? Are you she who used to burn with sweet, bitter eros, or she who learned to master the art of losing, she who did dying well, beekeeper's waspish daughter, Amherst's belle?" "Don't you know? But everyone who loses has prayed and laid an offering at my shrine. Though each who knows me calls me as she chooses, my name's Mnemosyne. I am divine, I am," she said, "the mother of the muses. Imagine you have 2, but I have 9. More even than that, for all the arts that be, sciences too, are born of memory." It made me smile to think of her at her loom, a gaggle of teenage daughters at her feet, no-nonsense Cleo, Melpomene gothed in gloom, graceful Euterpe, Terpsichore, who won't eat, Polyhymnia, with incense for perfume, Thalia, laughing, Urania, taking a seat at the telescope, Erato, fine-tuning her fiddle, Calliope, starting her story in the middle. She led the way now through a garden of musks from dark-fanged flowers, incarnadine, maroon. We came upon 2 gates, one made of tusks of prehistoric elephants, one hewn from massive savage horns, all around the husks and bones of great extinctions had been strewn. Here we must pass, she said, but not together. You pass through one, I shall go through the other. Then something began to happen. I felt her arm on mine. We seemed to travel, standing still. I saw a light. Had someone come to harm? I heard a distant siren, pulsing, shrill. But then I recognized the old alarm, harping on its monitory trill. It's dawn again, come with her golden rule, like a shepherd's crook, to harry us to school. There are lunches to make, I thought, and tried to find some paperwork from last week I'd mislaid, due back no doubt today, dated and signed. Instead, unearthed a bill we hadn't paid, located shoes, a scarf, a change of mind. I tried to put aside mistakes I'd made, to live in the sublunary, the swift, deep present through which falling bodies sift. I saw the aerist moment as it went. The light on my children's hair, my face in the glass, neither old nor young, but bare, intelligent. I was a sieve. I felt the moment pass right through me, currency as it was spent, that bright, loose change like falling leaves, that mass of decadent gold leaf now turning brown. I could not keep it. I could write it down. Memorial. Namasino. You'd lost your father's grave. We wandered, row by row, and plot by plot. And it was hot, under stiff cypress shade, the stillness drowned by a lone insect's corrugated sound. You went on ahead to inquire of the bureaucracy of the dead. Overdressed, uncomfortable as guilt, we stood around, not knowing how to behave. The kids began to wilt, and there was nowhere to sit that wasn't a tomb. Each grave was kitted out with a dustpan and a little broom to tidy the garden beds of the bereft, and here and there hung plastic watering cans chained to headstones and trees. Without a doubt, even in this place, there was a problem with theft. Then you came back with the coordinates and snagged a priest, glistening in polyester black, who at the grave, now found, spoke of the rest and rising of the dead, as if they were so many loaves of bread tucked in their oblong pans, in a kitchen gold with sunlight, rich with yeast. Momentary. I never glimpse her, but she goes, who had been basking in the sun, her links of chainmail, one by one, a glint with pewter, bronze, and rose. I never see her lying coiled atop the garden step or under a dark leaf unless I blunder and by some motion she is foiled. Too late, I notice, as she passes, zither of chromatic scale, I only ever see her tail quicksilver into tall grasses. I know her only by her flowing, by her glamour disappearing into shadow as I'm nearing, I only recognize her going. The Mycenaean Bridge. Beside the culvert of cement, beside the ill-made, potholed modern road, the cyclopean boulders hold their poise, and the keyhole of the corbelled arch bears their load. Atop, goat droppings tell that it is still in use, at least for goats, this bridge that shouldered soldiers on the march, and chariots, and harvest-laden carts, over the sudden motes, the torrents of the rainy equinox. Now from its centuries dark archway pour, and back again there dive a host of stings, the sweetness hoarding wild black bees. They hive here in the hollow in the rocks upon which leans the bridge, and gather gold dust for their queen out over hills pockmarked with looted tombs across eons that span from ridge to ridge. The Myrtle Grove, for R.W. 1. I would not like to think your soul abides in some gray wasteland of the suicides, who, loathing the light, have flung their lives away and innocent condemned themselves to stay in the shadow of the act that, now it's done, they would exchange for one peep at the sun, though life were toil and trouble. The swamp of hate encircles them. Their path is barred by fate. I'd rather think you found yourself instead among the moon-dim ladies of the dead, Phoenician Dido's solemn sisterhood, who wander in that dark-leaved, fragrant wood, sacred to Venus, in the Myrtle Grove, where dwell the shades of those who died for love. 2. Last night, I dreamt about the suicide, with her water-colored eyes, her ashen hair. She didn't ask what I was doing there, lucubrating on the other side. In dreams, it's curious how you decide, though every character is child and heir to your waking self, that they are real, and their voices aren't just echoes from inside. She said she wanted to give me a tattoo here on my chest. She said it was a heart, though it was crowned with antlers like a heart, its legend whoso list, but I said no. She turned as if to say, how could I know what stops the heart's tattoo, the heart's tattoo? Night thoughts. Night thoughts are not like bats. Do not trip out at dusk with bumber shoots and spats and fur coats in subfusc. Do not fall into flight into the upside down colander of the night and stagger on the town. They do not zag and zig, giddy on the wing as a jigsaw's jig. They do not squeak or sing. They're not the sharps and flats, the blue notes in the key, the way it seems that bats are accidentals free to swoop beyond the tune. The thoughts at night that come are midnight's afternoon, desolate and dumb. They weep their limestone tears. They hang but do not fly. Accretion of the years, they sweat, they petrify. Pandora. The Iron Age. The men had been drinking, those two surly brethren, hindsight and forethought. They sent her down to the cellar to fetch more booze, even though she'd murmured, "You've both had enough." Forethought, at least, you'd think would eschew a hangover. But then he was always cocky. He'd filched sparks from the gods and hadn't forguessed, nickname aside, the prank would backfire. His liver hadn't yet begun to creak as if an eagle tore it each morning. Hindsight, her husband, of course, remorsed their marriage. He'd said she was a punishment from Zeus, and that virginity made for a sorry dowry, depreciating soon as you drove it off the lot. There was just a dram in the drained keg, and that, she thought, she'd drink herself, dregs be damned. Broach a new cask. They were huge, a fathom tall. A man could drown in them, set deep in the floor so you could reach the mouth. She pried open the charactered seal with only her grappling fingers, but the wine had vinegared, or worse. What fumes, acrid with notes of brimstone, flies belched out. Hindsight would give her what for tonight for sure. Ouch! Just then the baby gave a disgruntled kick, right behind where she would have had a belly button if she'd been born instead of just made up by poets. Hindsight hankered for sons, more braces of hands for his failure of a farm. But if it were a daughter, she'd have some company and name her Heather, maybe, or Hope. Parmenion, Athens. The air raid siren howls over the quiet, the unrioting city. It's just a drill. But the unearthly vowels ululate the air, a thrill, while for a moment everybody stops what they were about to do on the broken street or in the struggling shops, or looks up for an answer into the contrailed palimpsest of blue. Always we forget. It's once a year, just as lush September's getting sober, ambushed by October. It strikes the heart like fear as the vibrations build to an all clear. The test is dubbed Parmenion after the general second in command to Alexander, implicated by his own son in a confession to a plot of treason. And Alexander had him killed, old family friend, right-hand man, comrade in arms, probably without reason, a pity, hence the groundless wails, the false alarms. Peacock feathers. A plague of feral peafowl in the garden. I know, who knew? Now decimates the grapes, makes salad of the young geraniums, dust-ups of dust baths and denuded planters. They leave ubiquitous piles of poo, as drab as any other poo. They make that sound as if of something throttled in the jungle, or honk to out-goose geese. They're worse than roosters at judging dawn, say 4 a.m., the moon, when full, rattles them off one after the other. There's something else to fight about. You swear, come autumn, you'll take up a rifle, blam! Are we the sort who murder birds? Sometimes they catch us off guard with pure pulchritude, the sheer implausibility of it, sublime unlikelihood. And when they molt, the garden sprouts a ferny iridescence dazzled with targets. Sometimes I think of Argus, monster with a myriad sleepless eyes set to spy on Jove or ward his mistress, fabled insomnia of the suspicious spouse. Her pet slain, Juno gathers the glamour of glares, still watchful in a fan of green-blue feathers. Unlucky things to bring into the house. Pencil. Once you loved permanence, indelible. You'd sink your thoughts in a black well and called the error ink. And then you crossed it out. You canceled as you went, but you craved permanence and honored the intent. Perfection was a blot that could not be undone. You honored what was not, and it was legion. And you were sure, so sure, but now you cannot stay sure. You turn the point around and honor the erasure. Rubber stubs the page, the heart a stiletto of lead, and all that was black and white is in between instead. All scratch, all sketch, all note, all tentative, all tensile line that is not broken but pauses with the pencil, and all choice multiple, the quiz that gives no quarter, and time, the other implement that sharpens and grows shorter. Placebo. No can do. I am doctor not of medicine, but Latinity. I am the future, singular, indicative, the first person. What do you take me for? If is a real condition. If I'm a pill, then you are double blind. What you don't know can't hurt you. Spoonful of sugar, it's all in your head, this dendritic alchemy of pain. Nothing works. Psalm beginning with two lines of Smart's Jubilate Agno. For the Lord commanded Moses concerning the cats at the departure of the children of Israel from Egypt. For every family had one cat, at least, in the bag. For that is the origin of the phrase to let the cat out of the bag. For cats do not like to travel from their homes in cages, nor Sherpa bags, nor will they submit to the collar or the leash. For all days to the cat are the Sabbath, the day of rest and freedom from the yoke. For the children of Israel had learned from the Egyptians the excellence of cats and their fastidious maintenance. For lo, even in Herodotus it is written of the Egyptians that they mourned their cats who had died. For the Egyptians shaved off their eyebrows to remember a perished feline. For the bereaved Egyptians must have seemed often quizzical with no eyebrows. For when their dogs died, the Egyptians shaved their whole bodies as well as their heads, altogether a less subtle look. For a missing eyebrow would be raised at death, like a question mark on its side. For I do not know if the Egyptians then drew eyebrows on over their shaved off ones, as some ladies do, unfortunately, to this day. For the Egyptians mummified their dead cats that they might prowl the afterlife stalking mice forever. For the mice were in the afterlife too, even without getting mummified, crawling through some wormhole in the wainscoting to get at the golden grain left for the pharaohs. For the cats had their own cat goddess and were already monotheistic. For cats did not believe in the dog-headed god of death if you consider a jackal a dog, which I do. For the cats had little need of an afterlife in truth, what with their nine regular ones. For when they were mummified, it was in strips of papyrus, Egyptian newspaper. For on this were sometimes the scraps of poems, the news that stays news. For cats know how to scan and make no false quantities. For cats are poetry, whereas dogs are prose. For Moses could issue no commandments to the cats themselves, for cats only contemplate suggestions. For a dog moves his tail to say yes, but the cat moves her tail to say no. For the cats told Moses to divide the Red Sea, for they had a repugnance of getting their paws damp. For the dry sands of Egypt proved an excellent litter box and preserver of papyrus. For in some theories, cats carry the parasites of insanity. For the mummies of cats are wrapped in ancient laundry lists and the lost fragments of Sappho. For a shaved eyebrow is the lacuna of grief. The pull toy. You squeezed its leash in your fist. It followed where you led. Tick-tock, tick-tock, nodding its wooden head, wagging a tail on a spring, its wheels gearing lackety-clack, dogging your heels the length of the house, though you seldom glanced back. It didn't mind being dragged when it toppled on its side, scraping its coat of primary colors. Love has no pride. But now that you run and climb and leap, it has no hope of keeping up, so it sits hunched at the end of its rope and dreams of a rummage sale where it snapped up for a song, and of somebody, somebody just like you, stringing it along. Refugee Fugue. 1. Aegean Blues. The sea is for holiday makers. Summer on the beach. Surely there is space enough to spread a towel for each. Dry land isn't something you should pray to reach. Look how glad our kids are, making their sandy town, and how they build the battlements the laughing waves tear down, but it's the selfsame water, where some swim and others drown. The sea is full of dangers, the shallows and the deep. The sea is full of treasures, down there 5 fathoms deep. The sea is full of salt. There are no more tears to weep. The ferryman says we cross tonight, and everyone pays cash. Charon, don't take MasterCard. You have to pay him cash. The water seems so calm tonight, you hardly hear the splash. There was a boy named Icarus, old Daedalus's son. He turned into a waxwing, black against the sun, drowned because he tried to fly. He's not the only one. Why would a kid lie in the sand and not take off his shoes? Why would he lie there face down, the color of a bruise? The sea can make you carefree, nothing left to lose. There's indigo and turquoise, there's cobalt, sapphire, navy, and there's a dark like wine, my love, out where things get wavy. Listen, that's the worry note, reminds me of my baby. 2. Charon. When some, as promised, made it to dry land, he profited high and dry. But others, owing to fickle winds, or a puncture, or freak waves, arrived at a farther shore, another beach, lapped by a numb forgetting, still in the clothes someone had washed and pressed to face the day, and lay in attitudes, much like repose, and Charon made a killing either way, per child alone, 600 euros each. 3. Aegean Epigrams. We beheld the Aegean blossoming with bodies. Aeschylus, Agamemnon. Upon an unseaworthy wooden vessel. Call it a tub, call it a casket, and all their eggs tucked in this basket. The Woman from Leros. The woman from Leros said, small bodies wash ashore, sea-chewed, a few days dead. I don't eat fish anymore. From an autopsy report of an unknown drowning victim, Icaria. Female, 9 years old, found wearing a blouse and a pair of sweatpants patched with Minnie Mouse. Duties. Which one seems more chilling? Copenhagen willing to confiscate cash and bauble from Mosul, Homs, and Kabul, or smugglers making a killing, palming Charon's obol? Fathomless. A fathom deep the body lies, beyond all helps and harms. Unfathomable, unfathomable, the news repeats, like charms, forgetting that to fathom is to hold within your arms. Word problem. The 21-foot-long dinghy can hold up to 30 people, max. If you squeeze on 64, wave a 9mm at their backs, and 6 Beaufort, 2 nautical miles out in international waters, which do you not save first? Infants, sons, mothers, fathers, daughters. Paradox. Of the ones that happen to die, the little ones, and the old, by hypothermia or drowning, all died of cold. Nothing to declare. As if in a sea of red tape, the faulty life jackets tossed. There is no custom house, no guards, at the border these have crossed. Proposed epitaph for drowned refugee children. Go tell the bureaucrats, passerby, that all is shipshape, fine. The stuff that trickles from your eye is only a little brine. 4. Appendix A. Useful phrases in Arabic, Farsi, Dari, and Greek. Found poem from the Guide to Volunteering in Athens as updated for March 17, 2016. Welcome to Greece. Thank God for your safe arrival, greeting after trip. Hello. Good morning. Good evening. Good night. Thank you. You're welcome. Please. I don't understand. I don't speak Arabic, Farsi. Slowly. Come here. You're safe. Are you wet? Cold? Yes. No. My name is... What is your name? He. She. It is. We. They are. God is with the patient. We'll make people laugh. Give yourself a break. Comforting words. Free. No charge. Refugee. Volunteer. Foreigner. Friend. I am hungry. Thirsty. Food. Water. Does it hurt? Sick. Pregnant. Mother, father, brother, sister, child, family. What country is your family from? Pharmacy. Medicine. Hospital. Doctor. Tent. Sorry, it has run out. We do not have it now. New shoes only if yours are broken. Wait here, please. I will return soon. Follow me, come with me. Come back in 5, 15, 45 minutes, 1 hour, quarter, half hour, half day, today, tomorrow, yesterday. How many people? Sorry. Stay calm. One line, please. Next person. The Rosehead Nail. Blacksmithing demonstration, Monteagle, Tennessee. But can you forge a nail? The pale boy asks. And the blacksmith shoves a length of iron rod deep in the coal fire cherished by the bellows until it glows volcanic. He was a god before anachronism, before the tasks that had been craft were jobbed out to machine. By dint of hammer song, he makes his keen, raw point and crowns utility with rose. Quincunx of facets petaling its head. The breeze made visible sidewinds. The boy's blonde mother shifts and coughs. Once work was wed to loveliness. Sweat-faced, swarthy from soot, he reminds us with the old saw he employs and doesn't miss a beat. Smoke follows beauty. The Sabine Women. O ravishers, O husbands, you have won. We are the country that is tamed by children. Light-footed maidens now waddle behind bellies in which two histories quicken the future. Tomorrow will dawn with a pang, like breaking waters. Oh, you have yoked us. Yes, but you have yoked us to yourselves. Now, see, you two are bounded on all sides, not by enemies, but in-laws. A sigh has turned the heart into a hearth. Let marriage be a truce, for from now on, the war between us is a civil war. Scissors are singular and plural. Uncanny. 1 + 1 = 1. Even in solitude, a pair, cheek to cheek, or on a tear, knives at cross purposes, bereaving cleavers to each other cleaving. Open, shut, give and take, all dichotomy in their wake. What starts with size concludes in oars, his or hers, mine or yours. Divvy up, slice clean, slice deep, in pinked jags, or one swift sweep, the crisp sheet where they met and married, the paper where the blades are buried. Sea urchins. The sea urchins star the seafloor like sunken mines from a rust-smirched war filmed in black and white. Or if they are stars, they are negatives of light, their blind beams brittle purple needles with no eyes. Not even spittle and a squint will thread the sea's indigo ribbons. We float overhead, like angels or whales, with our soft underbellies just beyond their pails, their dirks and rankles. Nothing is bare as bare feet, naked as ankles. They whisker their wrists in the fine print of footnotes' irksome asterisks. Their extraneous complaints are lodged with dark dots, subcutaneous ellipses. Caesars seldom extract even with olive oil, tweezers. Sun-bleached, they unclench their sharps, doom scalps their hackles, unbuttons their stench. Their shells are embossed and beautiful calculus, studded turbans tossed among drummed pebbles and plastic flotsam, so smooth, so fragile, baubles like mermaid doubloons, these rose, mauve, pistachio-tinted macaroons. Selvage. From self plus edge. The firmly woven edge of a fabric that resists unraveling. Odyssey, Book 22, 468-473. Who knew her son had salvaged so many hates? Their feet twitched a little, like thrushes caught in a fowler's net. The simile had the tang of remorse. No, surely the idea was his, to hoist them up like flags in their long skirts, modest now, the sluts, the dirty flirts, tongueless belles, spinsters of their own doom. While they twitched, a flutter of pity, But as it is, she finds them tidy and domesticated, dull plumaged with death. Now that they hang, as if in the spotlit vitrine of a future museum, from the warp, like a dozen ancient loom weights. Shattered. Another smashed glass. Wrong end of a gauche gesture towards a cliff, compass rows of misdirections scattered to the 12 winds, the wine dark sea wreck. Wholeness won't stay put. Why these sweeping conclusions? Always you're barefoot, nude-souled in a room fanged with recriminations, leaning on a broom. How can you know what's missing unless you puzzle all the shards? What cuts is what's overlooked, the sliver of the unseen, faceted, edged, hooked, unremarked atom of remorse broadcast across lame linoleum. Archaeologist of the just-made mistake, sift smithereens of schist for the unhidden, right in plain sight, needling mote in the midden. Fragments, say your feet, make the shivered, shimmering brokenness complete. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. The mood made him tense. How she sharpened conditional futures on strops of might-have-beens, the butchered present in sutures. He cursed in the fricative, the way she could not act or live in the indicative, only contrary to fact. Tomorrow should have been vast, bud-packed, grenade-gravid, not just a die miscast. It made him sad. It made him livid. How she construed from the imperfect past a future less vivid. Silence. Silence has its own notation. Dark jottings of duration, but not pitch. A long black box, or little feathered hitch, like a new Greek letter or diacritical mark. Silence is a function of time, the lark in flight but not in song, a nothing which keeps secrets or confesses, pregnant, rich, or awkward, cold, the pause that makes us hark, the space before or after. It's the room in which melody moves, the medium through which thought travels. It is golden, best, welcome relief to talk-worn tedium. Before the word itself, it was the womb. It has a measure. Music calls it rest. Similes, suitors. Odyssey. 1. Book Kai. Just as an illegal haul of undersized mullet is heaved out of the overfished Aegean, many-sounding, white-maned, dark as wine, and dumped out hugger-mugger on the shingle midst plastic bottle caps and the mirthless laughter of seagulls lured by biodegradation and leaving behind no fingerling nurseries. Just so the bodies of the suitors lay, dumb and twitching in a heap, a school of gape-mouthed, goggle-eyed, incomprehension, gasping for breath out in their foreseeable doom in the paparazzi flash of solar flare, dead to the future generations grieving for the lost current, for the swim of things. 2. Book Omega. The suitors' skittish shades began to squeak like the scritch of a toxic-fumed permanent marker scratching off the names of those who were absent, or as when deep in a cave a small brown bat plummets to the guano-spackled basement, jagged with assorted speleothems, and the colony of bats is all a-twitter, a roost that's been afflicted with the fungus that causes the contagious white-nose syndrome which strikes during hibernation, rousing the bats from torpor early, stirring them to starve, and they gibber like dementia from the cave's mouth into the starless, cold night of extinction, taking with them a white, night-blooming flower dependent on corruptorophily. Just so, the suitors pipistrelled and bleeped, trailing the Lord of Florists with his wand and Nike sandals, he who delivers a species like a bouquet of spiky asphodel, appalled with pollen, to the halls of hell. Sunion. You shouldn't wait for signs out on a cliff, watching the razzle-dazzle of the water, if you've no head for heights. Go home and say you only saw 3 half-tame partridges among the rocks and a seagull in the distance that seemed at first like the shake of a white sheet. If news is good, you cannot hurry it. If news is bad, it tracks you down. Don't meet catastrophe halfway, the steep what if, the offings full of optical illusions. The sails are black, but don't jump to conclusions. The stain remembers your embarrassment, wine or blood, sweat or oil. When the ink leaked your intent because you thought no truth could soil, or when you let the secret slip, or when you dropped the leaden hint, or when between the cup and lip the Beaujolais pled innocent, or when the rumor's fleet was launched, or when the sheets waged their surrender, but the breach could not be staunched, and no apology would tender. When over-served, you misconstrued and blurbed your heartsick on your sleeve, when everything became imbued with sadness, yet you couldn't grieve. Inalienable as DNA, self-evident as fingerprints, it will not out although you spray and pre-soak in the sink and rinse. What they suspect, the stain will know. The stain records what you forget. If you wear it, it will show. If you wash it, it will set. Summer birthdays. You would learn in kindergarten. There was one game you had no part in. Kings and queens of endless noons, you envied them their golden rule in crowns of bright construction paper, the cupcakes, streamers, brave balloons, the breath, and the expiring taper. Later, there were those at school whose invitation list would pique the class's interest for a week, sleepovers, where all was said or giggled about who liked whom, and anyone who left the room would have only herself to thank as butt of some unfunny prank. Sleep sneaked in at dawn. Instead, you always seemed to be at camp, slouched on a picnic bench still damp from swimsuit bottoms next to one your brief best only friend for 3 long weeks of forced hilarity, arts and crafts and nature fun. You stared down at your ugly sandals, hating the song and the stupid candles. In the dog days, playing dead, there still lies a sense of dread, something in you that accrues as you watch the summer blaze through the cyclopean days, the wine-dark sea of summer blues, fierce skies extinguished one by one when the dusk blows out the sun. Most everything you love was born at the cusp of harvest time, when the year was in its prime, before the autumn winds had torn the turning pages from the trees and rent the spider's thread of pride and brought the flowers to their knees. Every summer, like a tide, the anniversaries arrive, unclockwise with the clockwork earth, sister, mother, daughter, son, yourself, and then the other one, your father, were he still alive. Every August you have cried, when you celebrate his birth 10 days after he has died. And maybe it's not only Dad, but summer too, its vague alarm, another gone year's epitaph. The year still seems to start with school, fresh pencils, new hopes to be cool, while summer evenings, late and sad, and violet, and moist, and warm, and fading like a mimeograph. Sunset, wings. Crows descry the sky, desecrate the cyanic, scrying and crying. Swallows, I swear, not swifts, but swift, swoop, swivel, whose scissored silhouettes, belated, become a quibble of pipistrels, tippling acrobats. Who haunts the hill? Lo, one note woe, oh well, twilight throws in the towel. Swallows. Every year the swallows come and put their homestead in repair and raise another brood and skim and boomerang through summer air and reap mosquitoes from the hum of holidays. A handsome pair, one on the nest, one on the wire. Cheat, 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 the two conspire to murder half the insect race and feed them squirming to their chicks. They work and fret at such a pace and natter in between with clicks and churrs. They lift the raftered place, seaside taverna, with their tricks of cursive loops and Morse code call, both analog and digital. They seem to us so coupled, married, so flustered with their needful young, so busy housekeeping, so harried. It's hard to picture them among the origins of myth, a buried secret, rape, a cut-out tongue, two sisters wronged where there's no right, till transformation fledges flight. But Ovid swapped them in the tale, so that the sister who was forced becomes instead the nightingale, who sings as though her heart would burst. It's Ovid's stories that prevail, and thus the swallow is divorced twice from her voice, her tuneless chatter, and no one asks her what's the matter. These swallows, though, don't have the knack for sorrow, or we'd not have guessed, though smartly dressed in tailored black, spend no time mourning, do not rest. One scissors forth, one zigzags back, they take turns settled on the nest or waiting on a perch nearby to zero in on wasp or fly. They have no time for tragic song. As dusk distills, they dart and flicker. The days are long, but not as long as yesterday. The night comes quicker. And soon the season will be wrong. Knackered, cross, they bitch and bicker, like you and me. They never learn. And every summer, they return. Variation on a Theme by Uranis. I shall die on a mournful autumn evening. I shall die on an October afternoon, under scumbled skies of verdigris in Athens, listening to an out-of-tune accordion from the street, an old reprise of Sagapo, just as when we first came and rented a freezing flat on a steep hill, and the same accordionist singing the same refrain would pass beneath the windowsill at the same time every day. You could set the clock by his voice and how it told the exilic hour, and the urge to weep hit like an aftershock, and grief would edge the tongue like something sour. Though Tuesday's unlucky, I think that it will be a Monday when the summons comes from heaven. For the statistician's daughter, you'll agree, the chances are pretty good, 1 out of 7. And Monday's when the farmer's market comes, with the shaggy roots of things pried from the ground, and olives black and blue as hammered thumbs, oblong and shriveled, or compact, fat, and round. Whatever you might need, our neighborhood handles. Next door, next to the butcher and the baker, and the paraffin shop that makes the votive candles, is the going concern of an undertaker. And we're just 5 blocks from the first cemetery, though it would take more influence than we've got to get me in. I suppose they'd have to bury me with the foreigners if I could get a plot. My burial shall be unorthodox, though I don't mind the chants and undertones not being embalmed, dropped down in a plain box, and 3 years later they'll dig up my bones. Weathering. The rain is haunted. I had forgotten. My children are 2 hours abed, and yet I rise, hearing behind the typing of the rain, its abacus and digits, a voice calling me again, softer, clearer. The kids lie buried under duvets, sound, asleep. It isn't them I hear, it's something formless that fidgets beyond the window's benighted mirror, where a negative develops, where reflection holds up a glass of spirits. White noise precipitates. Rain is a kind of recollection. Much has been shed, hissing indignantly into the ground. It is the listening belates. Haunted by these finger taps and sighs behind the beaded curtain glistening, as though by choices that we didn't make and never wanted, as though by the dead and misbegotten. I hope you've enjoyed this production of Like, a Macmillan Audio production for Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. This title was produced by Guy Oldfield, text copyright 2018 by A.E. Stallings, production copyright 2019 by Macmillan Audio, all rights reserved.